You're listening to Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the curtain at Lyric Opera of Chicago. Backstage at Lyric features in-depth interviews with the singers, conductors, and creative minds behind the productions in the 2007-2008 season. For additional interactive content and to order tickets, visit us online at lyricopera.org.
Conductor and harpsichordist Emmanuel Haim is backstage at Lyric.
I don't think it's really music that should be conducted from a distance. I think you have to be in it as much as you can. And I think, therefore, the relationship that you have with the orchestra becomes completely different. And to make people responsible and being part of that and being close to the action and close to the singers as much as possible.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes at one of the world's great opera companies. I'm Roger Pines of Lyric Opera Chicago. In this episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with Emmanuel Haim. She's the phenomenal Parisian musician who will be in the pit both as conductor and harpsichordist for our Lyric Opera premiere of Handel's Julius Caesar. She's the first woman to conduct a production at Lyric Opera. She's also one of today's finest interpreters of Baroque repertoire, and major artists from all over the world adore collaborating with her, including two favorites of Lyric audiences, Nathalie Dessay and David Daniels. Before we play the interview, here's a brief synopsis of Julius Caesar. After conquering the army of his political rival Pompeo, Julius Caesar, or Giulio Cesare, triumphantly arrives on the shores of Egypt. He's outraged when Pompeo's head is brought to him as a gift from Ptolemaio, who rules Egypt with his sister Cleopatra. Pompeo's son, Sesto, of course, longs to avenge his father's murder. Cleopatra knows about her brother's ambition to become sole ruler, so she decides to seek Cesare's support. Disguised as her lady-in-waiting, Lydia, she intoxicates Cesare with her beauty. Sesto attempts to battle Ptolemaio, but he's arrested and imprisoned. Ptolemaio, meanwhile, is captivated by Sesto's mother, Cornelia, and forces her to join his harem. Cesare is enjoying Lydia's attentions when his enemies ambush him. He flees and is presumed dead. Ptolemaio's forces eventually fight those of Cleopatra, who's defeated and led away in chains. Cesare, having survived his battle, discovers Cleopatra's real identity and is able to rescue her. Sesto finally rescues his mother and kills Ptolemaio. Now, proclaiming their love, Cesare and Cleopatra bring peace to Egypt once again. Now, with all that background, let's go to the interview with our conductor, Emmanuel Haim. I hope you enjoy it. This is by far, I think, the most popular of the many operas of George Frideric Handel. What do you think accounts for that?
Well, you know, number after number in this opera, you find the most fabulous music, really, to start with. So there is that, the strength of the music, but not only that, the strength of the dramatic plot. I mean, it's so well written, and so the
connection.
Yeah, the connection in between the drama and the music is so well done. It's all so together, and there is comedy. There is blood at the same time. There is fun.
You wouldn't think, with Caesar and Cleopatra, that there would be much comedy. Where does the comedy come in?
Well, humor. Humor. She is full of humor. And she is, she has chic. She is a fun girl in this opera.
It sounds like Handel's made her a lot more interesting than the Elizabeth Taylor version, which we know so well.
Yeah.
She has a lot of facets to her, doesn't she?
Yes, and the thing is, the music makes you imagine of her so many sides, so many nuances. You know, in this of and despair and depth,
it's
and
all there.
Truth and innocence, and not only ambition, but commitment. And she will go so far in all that.
And very sexy character at the same time, isn't she?
Yes.
are there other people that are in the opera who are as interesting as the two of them?
Yes. Yes, Sesto and his struggle to be an adult and be able to really become a man, and all this opera, for him, it will take all the time of the opera. Ptolomeo and his wickedness. And
Ptolemy, who is Cleopatra's brother.
Yes, yeah. And husband.
And husband?
As all they were in that, all the Ptolemy's generation.
In the real life.
Yeah, they were marrying each other so that the blood would stay pure. But it made them insane. And so is the most insane, completely nuts, is totally wicked.
And that comes through in the opera very well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You did this production at Glyndebourne Festival Opera in England, correct?
Yes.
In 2006.
Yes. Right.
Now, in our phone interview several months ago, you talked about how much you loved the production itself. What makes it different and exciting for the audience and not at all what they expect of Handel Opera?
Well, David McVicar has a...
He's our stage director.
Yes. Right. He's got a great talent in really directing the singers as actors in a very realistic way, but it's actually very difficult to really do that, and he's extremely musical. So the combining those two qualities make him have visions, really, but being all that comes from the music and from the drama with real capacities of directing people.
And he also has a rather extraordinary choreographer that he's working with, correct?
Absolutely.
And beautiful designs, and costumes.
Yes.
It all fits together beautifully. Now, at Glyndebourne, you did this opera with our Caesar and Cleopatra, David Daniels and Danielle Denise.
Yes.
I know they're both big fans of yours, but what do you value most in your collaboration with them?
Well, David, I know from some time he was, for me, a spirit in Dido and Aeneas. And we are in the same recording company, so we've made music together now since quite a lot of time. I do appreciate, first of all, his musical qualities, involvement, knowledge, color. He's able of putting really color, feeling the harmonies. So he's a very musical singer. And then he happens to be a great actor, and which gives him a lot of strength on stage. I must say, both of them have those extraordinary qualities of music, which is you need in ancient music. You need to be able to improvise, to have freedom, to be able to be driven by the words and by the situation, and to be able to have rhythmic freedom, first of all. And they have that with, at the same time, real knowledge of all that. You know, Danielle is going to be my Poppea, for example, in Glyndebourne this summer. And I've already started looking a little bit into this music. And being sensitive to harmony is the first thing you need in ancient music. And they hear, both of them have that, really.
And here she is, still in her 20s. She's become a very outstanding Handel singer in a very short space of time. It's quite remarkable. Now, our orchestra is used to playing music on a very different scale from this. They play Wagner, they play Strauss, and so on. And, of course, they play modern instruments as opposed to the original instruments that you so often are working with, both in your operatic work and in your concerts. So what sort of sound do you hope to achieve at Lyric, and how are you going to go about it?
I don't know yet, because I haven't really met them, except the Continuo team. We were just having a Continuo rehearsal now. And
can you explain to our listeners what that is, what a Continuo group does?
Yeah, the Continuo group is made of the keyboard players, so harpsichords in other terms, or sometimes organ, but in this case harpsichord, and lute players. So those are the ones improvising the chords and around the chords that will punctuate all the recits, but also some of the arias. So none of that music is really written. And it goes with bowed bass instruments such as cello and double bass. And this team is like a small orchestra in the orchestra, which is totally free and improvised and should just be accompanying what is being said during the recits.
During the dialogue, in other words.
Yeah,
yes.
The dialogues, which are really all the moments where the action is condensated and everything is going on because you are, it's so just spoken, and those instruments are speaking with the singers, and then there is a kind of a relief that comes with the aria, which is the climax of the situation of the scene that was said right before. So if you were in a dramatic moment, you come to the dramatic aria or a charming aria, whatever.
So whenever you do a Baroque production, you always work with those players from the very beginning of rehearsals because they're so important? Is that how it works?
Yes. The thing is, if it is specialists playing, they would have done that many, many times in their life. And if it is non-specialist, the difference is they will not have done that so many times. But either it suits you or not. So it's to be tried. And I happen to have a very good team now.
Wonderful. There are just two duets. There are no trios, no quartets, but there are lots of arias in this piece. So
yeah.
I think Caesar has maybe 8 and Cleopatra has 7. Is that correct?
Yes.
So, that's more arias for any single character than in any of the well-known operas in the repertoire. Mm-hmm. So, how does our friend Handel keep our interest going through so many arias?
Well, the arias for one character are really the painting of their personalities. So, if you go for Cleopatra, from big seductive number, like Vadoro Pupille, which is I adore you, which is, she's supposed to be not singing that to Caesar as a mise-en-scène. She puts her
seduction.
Complete seduction number. When you've got that and Se Pietà, which is a complete despaired aria, and let's say Da Tempeste, which is a completely virtuoso aria, within three arias, you go really with different qualities of her that you can see and read. And just it's just human analysis of a personality, really.
Now, in the performances, you're not just going to be conducting, you're going to be one of two harpsichordists,
mm-hmm.
correct? And that makes it a fairly strenuous evening for you, doesn't it?
Well, as
good workout.
Yes, as the word say, the continuo player continues.
Yes, yes. So what is the advantage of the conductor actually being an instrumental player in a Baroque opera performance?
Well, that's the way Handel did it.
Okay.
So that's my point, really trying to be and put myself in that situation to try to be closer to what his thoughts could have been. Not that you would really recreate it, but by reading the impression of an audience, reading as much music of the period as you can, and place yourself in that, I hope to be as close as possible to the spirit of it. I don't think it's really music that should be conducted from a distance. I think you have to be in it as much as you can. And I think, therefore, the relationship that you have with the orchestra becomes completely different, and to make people responsible and being part of that and being close to the action and close to the singers as much as possible.
Now, of course, we can't let the occasion go by without making clear to our listeners that you are indeed making history with this company. You are the first woman to conduct a lyric opera production. So do you see progress being made for women conducting in major opera houses these days?
Yes, I think it does. It does progress. I don't have the time to really question myself about this and to look around of what's going on, because I'm actually too busy in doing what I have to do, and there is a lot to achieve. But I think it is important, and it's a place where progress has to be made somehow, because it's probably a different way than a man does things. A woman does things differently than a man. But why not conducting? Why not?
What drew you to the field when you could have easily spent your entire professional career as an outstanding harpsichordist? You were having a really wonderful success with it everywhere. So what drew you to this?
I guess after a while, it's like becoming an adult. You've got to do things yourself after a while. It feels like, okay, it's very nice to be given everything and to be conducted somehow and to be part of something where you're not in charge. But after a while, you've got to take your own responsibilities and do it. And you just feel that urge that is quite clear to you when it's like time to be a grown-up.
Now, your professional conducting debut was not an opera, correct?
It almost was, yes, it was, in Rodelinda in Glyndebourne.
That was the first conducting?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a huge challenge. It's as challenging as Julia Cesare. So how do you divide your time at this point? Is half of your conducting time in opera and half in concerts, or...?
A lot of time. I mean, I like very, very much opera, and a big part of the repertoire for me, like if you look at French music, the repertoire is opera in Baroque repertoire. If not, it's small scale, like chamber music or really small scale. And in between, there is no symphonies in the 18th century or 17th century, really. So it has to go through opera. Either you perform it staged or you do it on your own, and that's it. Alors, yes, there is quite a big field of instrumental music in Italian, in German, in British music, a bit less. But in French music, which is a repertoire that I absolutely adore, there's no way than doing... If you want to play Rameau,
It's opera.
Or ballet.
Do you have, now that you are on the podium, do you have dreams about doing the Ring cycle sometime, or do you want to stay with Baroque?
I stick to what I can play on the harpsichord, really, because that's my instrument, therefore that's my repertoire, and I think that's my skill, really.
Now, you've conducted Handel Opera in theaters of varying sizes, but probably not in a theater as big as this, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Does the size of this theater affect anything that you do musically?
I don't quite know yet. Not really at the moment. I think people will have the capacity, because the acoustic is very good in the theater. So when we will play very small scale arias, like some of the arias are extremely intimate, like one harpsichord, one cello and one singer, like Sesto's aria.
Caraspeme, right?
The Caraspeme is very small scale. And I think people can focus all of a sudden, and you can just drive them in like, and focus on that and be at another level. I don't think there is a way of adapting that. So I think people do adapt dynamic-wise, and they... silence becomes therefore more.
So you think that anything that a singer would do on the Glyndebourne stage in terms of intimate singing, they could also do in our theater?
I guess so.
If you had a particular scene in this production that you could suggest as something that would turn our audience into wildly enthusiastic Handel fans overnight, what do you think that would be?
Oh, there are so many.
I know.
It's really difficult, but I think the charming scene of Cleopatra to Caesar, the Vadoro, is just so beautiful. The choreography of it is so exquisite, really, and so perfectly adapted to the music. It's really... an absolutely charm. But if you take that, let's say that Da Tempesta is absolutely spectacular.
This is her sort of triumphal aria, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. those two, for example.
With a great dance routine to complement it. Well, I wish you all the success possible with this production, and I thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes at Lyric Opera of Chicago. Backstage at Lyric features interviews with the creative forces behind the productions in the 2007-2008 season. For additional interactive content and to order tickets, visit us online at lyricopera.org.